WPHM now presents Paul Miller's Week in Review.
Well, it's been very busy here on the morning show on WPHM. We spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks talking with candidates for public office. You can find those interviews archived on our podcast page or the election news page at WPHM.net. We've also been talking a lot of sports. Let's start with those gritty Tigers, the improbable late-season surge by the Detroit Tigers that propelled them to the wild-card round of the playoffs, where they swept the Houston Astros this past week. We talked with the radio play-by-play voice of the Tigers, Dan Dickerson, before that wild card round began, and I asked him, who are these guys? Where do they come from?
This is the question everybody's asking, and it's made it one of the most memorable of my 25 years, just because of when it started, how it started, and how they've done it. So, I mean, there's so many things that came together in August and at the end of July. Mm-hmm. But I always go back to, after trading Jack Flaherty, the plan that A.J. Hinch and Scott Harris came up with, because, as you know, it was not obvious where the innings would come
sure.
from. Who was going to log these innings in August, much less September? They came up with that plan. And guys who were going to be coming up from the minor leagues who needed maybe somebody to get them into the game so they could favorably match up with the guys who are then going to face maybe at the bottom of the order. And it worked just brilliantly. For Brand Herter, for Ty Madden, for Brian Sammons. And so that's kind of where it started. And then you add in Dylan Dingler gets the call. He's been a big part of this, even mm-hmm. if the offense hasn't been there yet. It will be. Dylan Dingler gets the call. Jace Young, Trey Sweeney. Carpenter gets healthy. Green gets healthy. Torkelson and Meadows come back from AAA. Think of all those things coming together. And then A.J. Hinch, I think, kind of challenging his team at about that time that they got hot. What kind of team do you want to be? We're not just bringing you up here. This is a team right now, Paul, that has 13 rookies on it. We're not just having you up here to, you know, get better at the major league level and hope we win a few games. We're here to win games. And when he set that tone and challenged them to not only continue their development at the major league level, but win while they're doing it. And that's not easy to do. They really responded, and they were younger, more athletic. They ran the bases more aggressively. It kind of set the tone for a really good brand of baseball. They just made plays mm-hmm. every single day.
Yeah.
It was amazing. There was a stretch in there as they continued to roll, Paul, where I was like, there are 5, 6, 7, 8 distinct moments in every game right now,
yeah.
offensively, base running, pitching, defense, where you're like, if none of those things, if one of those things doesn't happen, they don't win the game. And it just kept happening over and over. So a lot of things have come together. I always go back to the pitching because the pitching has been phenomenal mm-hmm. for 51 games now.
It really has. I was watching the postgame celebration on Friday, and there's Jackson Jobe right in the middle of it. I'm thinking, when did this guy get here? Yesterday. I mean, almost literally. He just joined the team, and there he is.
He's old enough to drink.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, here's a crazy stat, too, a bunch of stats. There is not a single player on this team that had 150 hits or 75 RBI or 25 home runs or 25 stolen bases. And that's the first time that a Major League Baseball team has ever made the playoffs in a 162-game season without having any players reach any of those goals. Is that amazing?
It is amazing. It is amazing. And it also shows you how so many have been contributing. I mean, you really right. are getting contributions from a lot of different players. And it tells you about the roster turnover that has occurred. And the other stat I'm sure that's out there somewhere, the number of plate appearances by rookies.
Yeah.
I don't think it just led Major League. I think it blew the rest of the major leagues away. How many at-bats they gave to guys in their first year or rookie seasons. There were 11 guys on this roster who made their debuts this year. And that's the other part of it. It's just Scott Harris and A.J. Hinch wanted to get playing time. As they put it, a little runway for these guys to show what they can do. And while, you know, it hasn't been, there's always going to be ups and downs, but they continue to grind and put together good at-bats. And while the numbers may not blow you away, they've contributed, and it's been phenomenal to watch.
So much fun. All these guys came up together at the same time. They're young. You know, whether yeah. they go far in the playoffs this year or not, we've got the nucleus, not even the nucleus, we got a team that's going to be solid for the next few years, I think.
Yes, and AJ has shown that, you know, he's always believed that he can build a bullpen without spending a ton of money. He's certainly done that. And that means that in the offseason, because they want to figure out, what do we have, what are the needs in the offseason? Now you can maybe spend money and, you know, maybe acquire that veteran bat, whatever it might be, another starting pitcher. But knowing that you can build, that AJ can always build, if you give him something to work with, Chris Fetter, Juan Nieves, Robin Lund, the pitching staff, they're going to make something out of it. And it's been the way this has been constructed is, I don't think anybody could have foreseen what we've been watching.
No, not at all.
But it's been a very deliberate plan, and you just can't say enough about the job the coaching staff has done to get the most out of these guys, and AJ always putting them in a position to succeed.
Are we concerned at all that they lost the last two games to Chicago?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Not at all.
Nope.
Not at all. Because, as AJ said, the number one priority the last 2 days was having enough pitching, your pitching lined up for your first playoff series.
Yep.
It's all about that. There are many things that go into having a successful postseason, but he will always start there because he's about to do something that he's never done before.
Yeah.
And nobody else has done before, and that's use a bunch of openers.
Mm-hmm.
After that guy named Scooble gets a start,
yeah,
it's going to be openers.
Yeah.
And he's going to have really fresh pitching. Really none of the guys we saw the last 2 days. He used a bunch of different guys Saturday and Sunday. But the main guys are all ready to go after Tarek Skubal's start in game one. And believe me, other teams hate it when A.J. Hinch has a fresh bullpen and he can line up his guys to make sure that your hitters don't ever face the same guy twice. I can't tell you what a huge advantage that is. And that's exactly what the Tigers are going to do to the Houston Astros. And it will be, you know, they're underdogs. There's no question.
Yeah.
Houston's really good. They've got a potent lineup. But when those hitters never get to face the same guy twice after Tarek Skubal, then that's advantage Tigers.
Dan Dickerson, the voice of the Tigers, with us this past Tuesday. Let's stay on sports and the radio voice of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Cal. We talked Friday about this year's team. I wanted to ask Ken first what happened down the stretch at the end of last season that kept the Wings out of the playoffs yet again.
Well, it was kind of an up and down, uphill battle at times, a downhill battle too, and it seemed like the Red Wings were rolling. At one point, they had 8 points on the teams that weren't going to make the playoffs, and they looked like they were doing good, and then Dylan Larkin gets hurt, and then all of a sudden the team loses 7 in a row, but then they came back, and the last 3 games of the season were just amazing. Every third period, they needed to win to stay alive in the playoff race, and they did that. They found ways to win in overtime in all 3 of the last 3 games, and it came down to the shootout, and Kane scored, but it was too late because Washington already secured the playoff spot. So, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, the Red Wings played well enough to make the playoffs, and I thought they would have given the New York Rangers probably a tougher battle than Washington did, but just didn't happen. Now this year, the division is a lot tougher, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The top teams in the division are still very good, and then the bottom teams like Buffalo, Ottawa, Montreal, they're all improving too. So it's going to be a tough division, the Atlantic Division, this year.
You know, what a great time, as you mentioned, to be a sports fan in Southeast Michigan with the Lions playing well, the Tigers in the playoffs. Who knew that was going to happen this year? And we're all excited about what the Red Wings can do. What are some of the strengths of the Red Wings heading into this season?
Well, I think Steve Yzerman was talking to the media and also the players last season at the end of the season, and he was talking about how the team's got to get better defensively. And you know, even though they scored a lot more goals than they did in the previous season, the way to win in the National Hockey League is to be better defensively. That means you got to be better in goal, you got to be better on the blue line core, and your forwards have to come back and really do a good job in the defensive zone. So I think the key going forward this year is they may not score as many goals as last year, but they should be better defensively. And you got to keep the puck out of your net. And if the Red Wings can do that and get better at that this year, they have a good chance, I think, to make the playoffs.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of guys coming back that, you know, maybe their contract was up or we weren't sure if they were going to come back. How do you like the makeup of this team?
Well, we have a couple of new faces in the Red Wing lineup. One in particular is Vladimir Tarasenko, and he was a player that was that won the Stanley Cup with the Florida Panthers last year, and he's always been an offensive threat in the National Hockey League. Started his career with St. Louis, and then he's traveled around the National Hockey League. But he's one of those players that can help you on the power play and could probably get you close to 30 goals if he has a terrific season. So he's one of the newcomers. Another newcomer on defense is Gustafson. And he's not a very offensive-minded player, but he's pretty steady back there on the blue line, kind of a shutdown type of defenseman. You always need that. And if the Red Wings are going in the direction of playing better team defense, he's the kind of guy that you'd want in the lineup. Mott is another player that I think he should help on the fourth line. He's smart. He really is. I saw him up in the red-white game, and he just makes so many great plays that go unnoticed to the fans, but to the coaching staff, he always seems to do the right thing. So that'll add some depth to the forward core. So there's a lot of new faces, a lot of players that have left last year, but certainly I think the Red Wings are right there in the mix with everybody else.
Well, and a lot of people around here excited to see Tyler Mott in a Red Wing jersey because, you know, he's a local guy, and that's always fun to see.
Yeah, you look at all the there's, I think, four players from the University of Michigan on the Red Wing team right now.
Yeah.
You know, you got Kopp, and you got Comfer, you got Dylan Larkin, and you know, the other player that I didn't mention as far as a new face was goaltender Cam Talbot. He had a pretty good season last year, and hopefully he's been around the National Hockey League, so hopefully, you know, he'll help the goaltending crew. And it looks like they're going to go with three goaltenders again this year. Alex Lyon had a good year last year. Talbot should help out there in that position. And, the Red Wings have some goaltending. Sebastian Kosa, who's looked pretty good in the preseason games. You know, he's the up-and-coming goaltender. And also Ville Husso, who was a brick wall in that game against Pittsburgh the other night.
Absolutely. As you look around the league, who's most improved? Who worries you on the schedule?
Well, I think if you're the Red Wings, you have to worry about your division. And, you look at all the top teams, and I mentioned them before, it doesn't look like they're going to go anywhere. I mean, Boston could slip a little bit. They've got a goaltending situation there where they haven't signed Swayman yet. He wants a boatload of money, and I don't know how long that's going to take. I would assume that at the start of the season they'll get that straightened out and taken care of. But Toronto's going to be good. Boston's going to be good. Florida should be good again too. Tampa Bay, they're not going away. And like I mentioned, Buffalo, Ottawa, Montreal, these are teams that are chasing the Red Wings and kind of in the same group as Detroit. And then you look at the Metropolitan Division, there's some strong teams on the other side too. I really like the Rangers on the other side. Carolina should be good. But again, it seems like it's going to be like it was last year. There's going to be four or five teams battling for maybe one or two wild card spots. So it's all going to come down to, how well you play. And I think it's going to take probably 93 points to make the playoffs this year.
Well, if you believe in magic, there seems to be some magic in Motown right now with the Tigers and the Lions, and no reason that shouldn't extend to the Red Wings as well, huh?
Well, like I said, it puts a lot of pressure on the Wings,
doesn't it?
I mean, the Tigers have been terrific. The Lions, they're expected to go deep, and who knows, maybe we'll see a Super Bowl soon from them. And again, the Red Wings, it's been 8 years since they made the playoffs,
yeah.
So I think it's about time that, they make it. It's going to be tough, but again, the parity in the National Hockey League is unbelievable. And it just seems like every team has a chance to win each and every game. It's not like it was years ago where you could play some teams and you already know you can count the 2 points. That's not the case anymore in a very competitive National Hockey League.
Ken Cowell, the voice of the Red Wings. They open their season at Little Caesars Arena Thursday against Pittsburgh. Natasha Hayden is leaving her position as the Downtown Development Authority Director for the City of Port Huron. She's taking on a new and somewhat similar role with the Community Foundation of St. Clair County. We talked about it with Natasha on Wednesday.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's a bittersweet moment. I'm extremely excited to be joining the Community Foundation of St. Clair County as a Community Impact Officer. So the job is fairly similar to what I do now, but the scope of work is a little wider, which happily for me will continue to include downtown Port Huron. So you guys cannot get rid of me that easy. Don't get too excited. I'm not going very far. It's pretty much connecting with groups throughout the county and, working to identify what is it that makes them vibrant or what they need to be more vibrant, and work with them, as much as possible to bring that to life.
That sounds exciting. It's a new position too, isn't it?
It is. It is a new position. The foundation has been, growing slowly but surely, and I'm just happy to be part of that journey.
As you look back on your time as the Downtown Development Authority Director for the City of Port Huron, what are some of the memories that you have? What are some of the things that you're proud of as far as accomplishments?
So many, actually. First of all, the relationships with the businesses that we have been able to develop has been so meaningful to me. Those guys are like a true community, they care very much for the area and how much we can make it, just better overall. 2 years ago, we actually launched a beefier facade grant program where we were able to give $100,000 to 15 different businesses altogether to improve their facades. And being a historic downtown, that has been one of the most impactful and literally visible improvements that you can see throughout downtown. And not only that, even the events that we have done and changed quite a bit throughout the years, Chili Fest, which will be here before you know it, is now a crawl format with the chili competition. And that has even given more visibility to the businesses, bringing traffic to inside of their business and a deeper relationship into folks in the community and in between the businesses and the folks in the community. So between that and so many more, even working with the different departments, that has been, as you may know, the DDA is a staff of one, unless you are in the summertime working with the beautification assistants. So to have that partnership between the different departments and, making sure to bring them in into the vision, and which is semi-easy because downtown is a place that is easy to love. But just being able to develop those relationships and have them being part of that growth and the different initiatives have been very, very rewarding overall.
Talking with Natasha Hayden, she is leaving the city of Port Huron as a DDA director, joining the Community Foundation in a new position as a Community Impact Officer starting in January. Natasha, you talk about loving Port Huron. What do you love about this community?
The people, but also how amazing it looks. It's just a very remarkable kind of place to unforgettable kind of place. I remember bringing my mom here from Brazil, and I did a little tour of Michigan. We went to Mackinac Island and a little cabin up north. I showed her the bridge, and I thought she was going to be very impressed with the Blue Water Bridge, and she was. And when she stopped in downtown Port Huron, which is kind of we started up north, so downtown Port Huron ended up being one of the last stops. She's like, oh my gosh, we got to come here more often. This is actually amazing. it was one of her favorite places. So that is definitely a very memorable place to be in.
Well, really exciting. Again, congratulations, Natasha. And we'll be talking again soon, I think probably about Art Hop, won't we?
Exactly. So what I like about this, there's a transition period here, right? I'm not leaving into January. And again, I'm not going very far anyway. But throughout the next 3 months, we are continuing to carry on the different events that we have in downtown Port Huron. Art Hop is taking place next week, October 11th and 12th. Traditionally has been a Friday night only event, but we are extending to Saturday. So you come in either Friday from 5 to 8 or come back on Saturday from 11 to 3. And we're going to have over 50 artists placed throughout downtown inside of the different businesses. And you get to shop for macrame or paintings, jewelry, all kinds of handmade goods that are made locally, which is awesome. Outside of that, we are already planning for Santa to come to town, and I'll make sure to that he will be here and he'll be happy doing the tree lighting, and there's more information coming on that. But the participation registration is already up on our website at downtownph.com.
Natasha Hayden with us this past Wednesday. Pollock Randall Carr Simpson and Marysville Funeral Homes are bringing a world-renowned grief expert to Port Huron on October 15th and 16th. Dr. Alan Wolfeld has written a number of books on the topic, and I asked him Friday morning how grief became his life's work.
Well, it was Robert Bly who years ago said your greatest gifts often come from your wounds, and I had a series of losses in my teen years and discovered that we as a culture, which I've written about being fairly mourning avoidant and emotion phobic, don't really support people in the long term when they have life losses. And so I wrote my first book at age 19. People started to invite me to speak, and gosh, what an honor that I get to travel throughout the world advocating for the needs of bereaved people and training care providers in how to provide effective, compassionate support to people who have life losses.
Do you feel like you and others are making a difference in that we are beginning to talk more about grief and about our feelings and our emotions?
Yes, I'm somewhat optimistic, but I at the same time think we have a ways to go. I think there's still too many people that get greeted, unfortunately, with what I have called buck up or move on messages. Carry on, keep your chin up, keep busy. God wouldn't give you anything more than you can bear. One door closes, another one opens. Mm-hmm. Be glad he's lived to be 89, which is, of course, always comforting to the 88-year-olds in the room when people say that. So
right.
I think, my friend, there's still a tendency to minimize the needed support and to provide models not of treating people out of a medical model of grief care, but I'm a real advocate for my 11 tenets that we companion people, we don't treat them. The capacity to give and receive love requires a necessity to mourn, and as our culture's lost an understanding of that, we've tended to move in a direction of kind of pathologizing grief. So in the one-day workshop, I'll talk about grief is naturally complicated. People do the best they know to do. Let's create frameworks and ways of creating care plans to be of help to them. Because if we mourn well, we go on to live well and love well.
That is so well said. And what an interesting approach, because there are so many things that we just want to go away. We want that cold to go away. We want a broken bone to heal. We want afflictions to be treated and disappear. Grief never really goes away, though, does it?
Well, I always say mourning never discreetly ends, only as time goes on and you do your work, it may erupt less frequently. I think also your reflection there speaks to the distinction between caring versus curing. Curing means to remedy or eradicate, and we don't eradicate grief. We can care, which is the foundation of creating hospitality for each other, shared space where a stranger becomes a friend. My most recent book is titled, You Have to Stay for the Cup of Coffee, and it teaches even lay people how to be present to someone and honor the need to know that they're the true expert of their grief and to allow them to take their grief, the internal response to loss, and convert that into authentic mourning. And that distinction is mourning is the shared social response to loss, or it's grief gone public. If you grieve but don't mourn, you drowned in your grief. Characteristics of our grief only soften or change over time, slowly and recursively, if we have safe people and safe places who allow and encourage us to openly and authentically mourn our life losses.
It's Alan Wolfelt. More on his appearances in Port Huron at Pollock Randall Carr Simpson and Marysville Funeral Homes. I'm Paul Miller. See you on the morning show Monday through Friday, 6 till 10, right here on WPHM.